I'm Dr. Sarah, a licensed chiropractor.
And I'm Val, clinical research enthusiast and international board-certified lactation consultant.
We are passionate about helping you navigate women's health and wellness topics naturally.
We bring the information and options
so you can make empowered choices.
This is the Empowered Women podcast. Just a reminder, the information contained in this podcast is for educational purposes only and is not intended to diagnose, treat, or cure any disease or illness or be taken as medical advice. Always check with your healthcare provider for medical advice.
Wait. Now we are.
Yes. Hi, Dr. Sarah.
Hello.
You're back.
I feel like we are both, what's the word I'm looking for? We're under duress. Oh, what's the word I'm looking for? About like paranoid about recording.
I know. Well, I think I don't know if we told everyone. So we have another episode that we have to release and we might have talked about it there. I think we record it because so Dr. Sarah and I had a recording with someone and it was amazing. And apparently we don't have the recording anymore. So we recorded a great episode and boo. So now we're both paranoid about whether or not we're recording when we're talking.
Right. So we are recording. I can see it everywhere that says yes. So we are good to go.
How are you?
What were you saying?
Life update. How's sleep? Yeah. How's the baby? How's life?
Life has been hard lately. Really? Yeah.
Okay.
It's been hard. I really feel like which is why I'm trying to send you this thing. Okay. I'd like your honest feedback just from like point of view and like just at a glance and because of everything I've been diving into lately.
Yeah. Which is
been diving into hormones a lot lately.
Yeah.
More than I ever thought that I was.
Right.
But the connection between the liver and sex hormone metabolism and actually its association with the thyroid, which we have talked about that on this podcast before, about how you get a blood panel back, it looks like everything's great, and then there's no follow-up. But from what I've been reading and researching lately, the follow-up is to look to the liver.
Yeah.
That's the follow-up.
Well, okay. So.
Go.
It's a normal blood panel. Because if you run like a full like thyroid panel and some other things that you should be looking at in conjunction with that, you will probably see something off, and then yes, you maybe need to look at other things because it may not give you an exact answer, but it will give the practitioner an idea of where to go, or where someone like you or me could be like, okay, let me just like tell you what, like educate you a little. I can't like diagnose and treat, but I'm gonna send you to somebody that can help you with this, but this is what you're looking at, like
right. And I think I mean correct me if I'm wrong, population, but this has never been like really explained on blood work that I've ever had. Yeah. It's widely known on this platform that I had a serious liver issue with Eli.
Yeah. When you were pregnant, right?
Yeah, so when I was pregnant with Eli, I had cholestasis. So that's a liver disorder.
Can you describe for people what that is? Because I'll be honest, before you even told me about that, I had no idea what it was or that you got it when you could get it when you were pregnant. Like you're like, oh, well, I kind of have this risk factor. And I'm like, well, what the heck is this?
So it is only supposed to affect like 10% of the pregnancy population. But I've talked to a lot of women who actually had it, which it feels like it's higher than that. But it's essentially your liver gets very bogged down with the sex hormones that you're secreting in excess. And you get this, almost like a block in your liver where you're accruing or you're overproducing bile salts.
Okay.
So your ducts get kind of clogged up. You get too much bile salts. It really pushes up against your skin because like your blood vessels kind of get blown up this is the, from what I remember, because it's been a while since I've really looked into it.
Yeah.
So the bowel salts are essentially creating a vessel and like skin condition that causes extreme itchiness. So
that's right, because you would keep saying like you have to suffer your bowels. Yeah. So wait, so you were managed though to avoid this with Archie, right? So did you do anything different, or like were you like purposely preventing it, or like how does it, I don't know, can you even do that? Like,
so this was my theory, and I was told maybe, but probably not, but probably, like there was like no real definitive answer with Eli. I believe in my soul, deep in my bones, that this is what happened, was that I was on an absurd amount of progesterone.
That's right. I remember. I was on
suppositories, injections, and oral doses. Yes,
freaking nuts. But yes, until, I remember all this.
Yeah, okay. Up until my third trimester, which is unheard of.
You probably felt like garbage, too.
I felt like garbage all the time. So, like, from what I'm learning now is that, and there was only, what, like a 18-month difference? No, less than, like, the difference between Archie and Eli is not a long time.
Right.
But the protocol for progesterone is that you stop in the second trimester. You stop it because it essentially doesn't matter anymore.
Right. Well, you should be producing enough for those listening to maintain the pregnancy at that point.
And we kept getting these charts back and they were within normal range, but then the person prescribing was like, no, we need to do injections now. And in my gut, I thought it was weird, but we didn't do anything about it. And then I ended up with cholestasis, and when I went to the hospital, they were like, stop everything you're doing right now. You have cholestasis. And essentially that means you can have a stillborn baby. So that's why you induce early, because of the risk of stillborn, because of the bowel salts. So okay. That was scary for Archie because it is almost, I think it's like 90% reoccurring in subsequent pregnancies.
That's crazy.
But I didn't have to take a drop of progesterone with Archie.
Yeah. Yeah. But you did a lot of hormone supporting. And so let's talk about this, friends, because we're always preaching about like getting to the root cause and then applying those things with your own body when you figure it out with someone or you think you've kind of come to a conclusion. And Dr. Sarah did that before she got pregnant the second time. And she did a lot to help her body and she didn't end up with this.
Well, and this is, it's kind of interesting, like thinking about it, and especially like with some of the things we're going to talk about today. The biggest thing I did was a total gut reset, parasite removal, yeast infection. Like I took care of my gut heavily. And you and I had to talk about that because I was doing something, like I had to stop nursing to do this.
Big protocol. There were some of the herbs and stuff that were in there were like questionable, although I feel like, you know,
at that point I probably could have.
Yeah. At that point in time, they're so much older. It's different depending on what it is. Right. But no, I totally get you.
But at that point, Eli really wasn't interested. So I did this major gut reset. But the biggest thing I did was I took a pretty good thyroid supplement.
Okay.
And I really feel at that point in time, I healed my thyroid, which what we'll talk about a little bit today, probably freed up some energy off my liver.
No, it makes sense. It makes a lot of sense.
And I had zero issues with Archer outside of like positional things at the end.
That's great. Yeah, that's crazy to me.
So when we think about the liver, like what's the first thing you think about for liver? Alcohol. Like,
well, yeah. So it's our major detoxification organ.
And like, I feel like it's such a stupid general thing, but if I were to ask like probably like 90% of the population be like, it's what my liver cleanses after I binge.
It processes. No, it does so many things, but like you're trying to say it deals with a lot of the sex hormone like processing. And a lot of times when there's backup up the line or you have high levels of something, it's because your liver is not detoxifying it or breaking it down properly.
Right. And so, like, we think about, let's think about a woman at its core and what we've talked about in this episode. We do 500 things at once, right? And doing 500 things at once, things start to fall behind. Your liver is doing so much for you. Mm-hmm. It's breaking down sex hormones. It actually helps with thyroid function. It helps with the conversion of vitamin D. It breaks down alcohol. It detoxes the poison you put in your body. It helps store vitamins and minerals. It's doing all these things. Go ahead.
So really, another really important point is that it stores glycogen, which is broken mm-hmm. down when you need more glucose, because that is our fuel. That is our cell's primary fuel source. There are other pathways, but the preferred pathway is to use glucose. So a lot of times, and I mean, I've been a distance athlete. Like, I've done a lot of like long, intense stuff, and like the glycogen metabolism is super important, because if you're running low, like you're hypoglycemic, even say mm-hmm. you ate breakfast and then you didn't eat for like another 8 hours. Mm-hmm. Your liver is going to start breaking down glycogen, because you need to then that glycogen is basically like chains of glucose that are stuck together. So it's going to start like cleaving those and giving you fuel, because you're not putting any in your body. So, any endurance athlete understands the whole like glucose glycogen thing, and like you can deplete your glycogen stores in your liver if you're exercising long enough.
And I think that's such an important part too, but it's like, we think about the brain as like this master controller, but we have like, the liver is almost a master controller in its own right. The gut is a master controller in its own right. And we do not give these systems of our body enough credit.
We don't give them enough care either, because let's be honest, the gut and the liver are taking the biggest beating at this point in time in our modern era, like mm-hmm. era. Like that's the bottom line. Like everything is affecting your gut microbiome, and thus affecting everything downstream, and everything is affecting the liver, because we are putting more things and toxins mm-hmm. and it's not just toxins, it's so many things into our systems that have to be broken down and detoxified. So we're at like capacity and load and interrupting really important processes that we're usually, we didn't have to deal with, I should say, like hundreds and hundreds of years ago. That's like
even 100 years ago. Yeah. Even 100 years ago. Mm-hmm. 50 years ago.
Yes.
So I want people to think about that image of like the stressed out woman, because I mean, we're women here. We're talking about women's health. Think about the stressed out woman that has like 5,000 things on their plate.
Mm-hmm.
So when you have 5,000 things on your plate and you're expected to do these major processes in the body, like the liver does, one of those is estrogen metabolism and breaking those down into different metabolites that are easy for your body to process and get rid of. So mm-hmm. whenever your body, and this is seen a lot in our generation and the generation above us, and I'm very fearful, and we've talked about like this new era of being next to these hormone blockers in our foods and our laundry and everything that we consume. So I want us to think about like to you, like what's a traditional person look like that has like effed up estrogen production? So like the person that has heavy periods, mood swings, headaches, sleep disturbances, breast tenderness,
fibroids.
So this person,
skin issues.
So like that's someone that has out of control estrogen. And when your liver is doing 10,000 things at once, it's not breaking down estrogen correctly, or we're putting them down the wrong chute. So you can think of estrogen metabolism as three separate pathways in the body. or in the liver specifically, to break them down in these little teeny tiny metabolites that your body is then going to excrete through your elimination system. So your bowel movements and your urine.
You gotta be, ladies, I want to say this because I'm very passionate about this as somebody with a microbiology background. You need to be pooping a lot. Like, the norm is not once a day, friends. We've normalized that because that's what typical healthy people like are producing. But really, if you get down to it, you should be pooping multiple times a day.
Yep.
And the best thing to get rid of excess estrogen is to be pooping. So, yes. Like, you really, like Dr. Sarah already pointed out, and we talked about earlier, like, the gut health is a big thing. So you need to be pooping so that you can get rid of the extra estrogen. But if your gut health is messed up, you're probably not pooping. Like, you should be going multiple times a day. That is not unheard of.
Yes.
I know plenty of healthy people that go multiple times a day. Sorry.
And it's like,
I have you on here.
No, you're right, because it's like there's a difference between someone with like urgency and bowel movements and bleeding, like, then like, oh, this is like a normal, healthy second bowel movement of the day.
Yeah, like no, like it should, yeah. And really, it's supposed to be every time you eat, but we've kind of like gotten away from that, I think, as human beings. Then again, there,
well, it comes down to frequency, right?
Yeah, if you're eating well and you're eating enough fiber, chances are you may be going every time you eat, like at least three times a day. So there's really nothing wrong with that either.
No, and that's like, so that's like one of the biggest ways, like you just said, fiber is to support the third and final phase of estrogen elimination is through enough water and having enough fiber in your diet so that you can properly push the estrogen and the estrogen metabolites through on its final leg. So the first phase and the second phase of breaking down estrogen comes in the liver. The third phase is through the gut and the kidneys. So whenever your body initially starts breaking down estrogen, you're going to start, like I said, in the liver itself. And these metabolites have to become water soluble in order for your kidneys to eliminate it further. So different ways that you can support the breakdown of estrogen, and I've been posting a lot about this lately, is through eating vegetables that contain something called I3C in the short form, because it's converted to something called DIM. So there are different things that you can eat that naturally have these occurring, and those are your cruciferous vegetables.
Yep.
So kale, cauliflower, broccoli, Brussels sprouts, those are going to not only give you a lot of fiber, but they also, especially if they're green in nature, like broccoli and kale, they have not only the antioxidant portion of it, but they also contain these two chemicals that help you break down estrogen into the healthy pathway.
Broccoli sprouts are like magic.
Magic.
Oh. Broccoli sprouts are actually a huge part of my protocol, and I put a scoop in smoothies or yogurt, you know, or something. I use a freeze dried version that Chloe found for me that I absolutely love, because I can mix in so many things and it's concentrated. So I don't actually have to get like broccoli sprouts. And actually, DIM supplementation is very popular too, now that you've mentioned DIM, for that issue. But yeah, I can't stress enough, like what Sarah's saying is, you know, I know a lot about plant-based diets because I followed one almost fully plant-based, but then I was vegan for 2 years in college. So a lot of experts will say one of our biggest problems with the standard American diet is the lack of fiber. And just like you're saying, it doesn't matter if you're going, I don't care if you're plant-based or not, but you've got to be consuming lots of fiber. It is such a superfood for so many things. And we, like, it's the amount that Americans typically get is so low. They don't even, like, come close to the recommended, like, 25 grams a day, which is, like, not enough.
eating, so what's recommended for like pushing your body into a favorable estrogen metabolism pathway is 500 grams of broccoli.
Stop it. Stop it. Like, it's, see, and it's crazy to me. And that's why, like, it's really important to understand what you need to do to tweak your diet, understand like what types of supplements you can be taking or things to be like boosting that.
It's- I was talking to someone and they were like, oh, what did they- oh, I know who I was talking to. I'm not going to mention, it's a patient. She's doing a Dutch test right now. Okay. But she was like, I am so tired of going to the doctor and then just telling me, take some Metamucil. Okay.
Oh, that stuff's gross.
She's like, why do I want to be on Metamucil for the rest of my life? Excellent point, because what are you getting from it? Just fiber. You're not getting these essential, like DIM and I3C to help you break down other things. It's not just about pushing things through your body. It's about
getting the poop. It's about doing it the right way.
So those cruciferous, just like you said, like broccoli sprouts, that's actually important for the second phase, or the phase that actually converts these smaller forms of estrogen into the water soluble form of of estrogen. So the first phase is just breaking them down into these metabolites. The second phase is making them water soluble. And the broccoli sprouts are really good for that because it contains something called, I'm going to butcher this because I'm so bad with pronunciation. No, that was actually it. Nailed it. Sulforaphane. So that's what actually helps.
Okay. Well, Ainsley, because you cut out a second too. And I was like, wait, did you say it or not? I totally missed that. But you did.
Sulforaphane. So it's an antioxidant and an anti-inflammatory molecule. And it helps with that phase two metabolism. So that is what pushes your body into making things water soluble for the third phase of elimination through the gut. And then elimination through the urinary tract. So like we were just talking about, not just about pushing things through your body, it's about eating the correct things, because you're not just getting these estrogen help aiders and like metabolism, you're getting the fiber, you're getting the antioxidants, you're getting these things to help your hormones regulate. So one of the things that I'm going to ask you about, and you're going to be like, Sarah, you're asking me this and I don't do you think, and maybe it's just me, and then I heard this myth, but I was told not to eat these things because it would make my baby gassy.
Wait, say it again. It would make what?
It would make my baby gassy if I was nursing and eating these things.
So there's, okay, there's a
lot. Is that a myth that I made up? Because I swear older people told me that. I had a pediatrician tell me that.
Yeah, lots of people still continue to talk about that. Now, I see lots of IBCLCs posting about this and sharing information on this. Milk is made from your blood. So you are digesting your food, right? And then you're absorbing things into your bloodstream. So the research says that those foods cannot make your baby gassy, even though they may be making you gassy.
Mm-hmm.
However, lots of moms report like contradictory information to what the research says. Now, is it those particular foods that's making the baby gassy, or are they gassy for another reason and it's just coincidental? I mean, it's like hard to tell. I can tell you what the research says. Do I absolutely agree with it? I mean, I've seen differences in my own children. So I don't know that it's necessarily completely like it's an old wives' tale or a myth, but I'm not convinced we can actually say that, even though the science wants us to believe otherwise, because that's, I understand the whole milk making process. And yes, it doesn't logically seem to make sense, you know, because milk's made from your blood, that the baby would be gassy from
your digestive system.
Well, I mean,
I just think it's weird that we're told not to do this thing. We're not to eat these. Do not eat these things postpartum.
Oh, I eat them all the time. I mean, like, no. I think
people, when it will absolutely, Well, it's like it will absolutely help you in the postpartum start to balance these hormones out.
I think each person needs to look at their situation specifically and be like, okay, when is the baby gassy? Are they getting gassy after I'm consuming high amounts of beans or broccoli or whatever? And is it only then? Right. Because chances are, if you have a gassy baby, that's not what's causing it.
And we know that because of, like, listen to other episodes. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot more to do with, like, dural tension, causing gassiness, and, like, improper elimination.
Yeah. All right. So I'm telling you what the science says. Everybody's experience is different, right? We have to go on what the evidence says, and then you got to kind of go on what the parent is saying too. So I can't say either way.
So I'm gonna tie this up in a little bow for people. If you want to help with like a phase one support, look towards your cauliflower, broccoli, Brussels sprouts, broccoli sprouts. Actually, there's another compound in the skin of grapes and berries that are antioxidants in nature, and it'll actually also help you push you towards that more favorable estrogen metabolism pathway.
Well, these are all fiber-rich foods you should be eating
anyway.
When we say get fiber, like, it should be from these types of things, including things like beans, lentils, you know, everything Sarah's like talking about too. Because those other types of things also have gut healing compounds and components. Not only are they rich in fiber, they're rich in so many other things that are good for you. Go ahead.
If you want to help with like that second phase, I mean, we talk about like seed cycling, but pumpkin seeds.
Love seed cycling so much.
Seeds, excellent for a source of magnesium. Eggs for choline, B6, and fish, bananas, grains, legumes. Your B vitamins are really good. Like super V vitamin would be good, but if you want to find it in more natural sources, eggs are a really big part of that. If you want to be vegan, you're going to look more towards like the legumes and different seed cyclings and things like that. And if you want to reach out to us, we can give you a list on that. But again, with phase three, just lifestyle changes, like eating fibrous foods or limiting pesticides, so making sure you're eating organic to help with that final push through the system. So I thought that was super interesting and like absolutely mindful for people to do. Now, if sometimes people's livers are like too bogged down, there are different supplements that you can take that have highly concentrated forms of these things. The one that I really want Val to look at is something called Live Clear, because I really, really need to see if I can use it with breastfeeding, and I will show you that.
Do you think, send it to me. Do you think your liver's backed up?
Right. So funny. Everyone keeps telling me. Okay. So after Archer, I had two different gallbladder tests done, and my gallbladder has zero stones, zero sludge. It's just, quote, not functioning properly. I don't think it's my gallbladder.
Right.
Maybe it's my liver still. Like, it never totally recouped from everything with Elijah.
Well, yeah. And everybody's liver is a little back. Like, I hate to say it, but a lot of our livers are just way bogged down right now.
And I mean, I show signs of having estrogen issues historically. Okay. My mom has fatty, like, we have a rare genetic issue in our family called hemochromatosis, which directly affects the liver. Okay. My mom has genetic factors for it. My papa absolutely had it. It's a matter of like, did my mom and dad both have the genetic factor that maybe expresses in me? Like, I know we have liver issues in my family. And I know with like the hormonal issues I have.
Yeah.
Something that I really feel like in this postpartum, I'm just seeing a lot of.
Right. And maybe it just needs, it's going to need a lot of support. Like now or just like moving forward.
So that's one part of the liver that we wanted to talk about. That was like a lot of information.
Yeah, that was a lot. Ton of info, really good info. And we want to talk about the liver and thyroid, but I think we're going to save that for another episode.
Yes. Yeah, so if you have any questions about some of the supplements that we talked about or a list of the proper foods that you should be eating for each of those pathways, feel free to reach out to us. I'm actually going to make like a little cheat sheet for people, and they can message us. Yeah. And we can send it to them in a PDF file.
Awesome.
Awesome. Good to see you.
We'll see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
If you enjoyed this podcast and want to hear more like it, make sure you subscribe to the Empowered Women Pod and rate us 5 stars. Please feel free to also write a review on the podcast. It really does help to spread the Empowered Women message, and it moves us up in the podcast rankings. Plus, we love to hear from our listeners. You can follow us on Instagram at Empowered Women Pod, or if you have a question and want to reach out to Val or I, you can email us at empoweredwomenpod@icloud.com.